This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club. Mark's had his warm weather break in Madrid, but myself, Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon back for another jam-packed episode this week. We've had a week of international football, but we can now look ahead to club football returning in the Premier League. Mark, we've got a whole host of brilliant guests joining us today, but how are things with you?
Yeah, all good, Jack. I know a lot of football fans don't like the international break. I have to admit, I don't mind them. I don't mind the breather every now and then. You know, it gets a little bit relentless. The Premier League to Champions League to Carabao Cup back to Premier League. So to have a little week off every now and then from the serious stuff, it's no bad thing in my book.
No, absolutely. We won't go too in depth into it, but the Nations League has been a welcome addition. That we had some exciting action in that, didn't we?
Absolutely. I think the Nations League, you know, UEFA and FIFA get a kick in a lot of the time. And I think more often than not, it's probably for the right reasons. But, you know, the Nations League has shown really, you know, there were two main problems people had with international football outside of major tournaments. Too many mismatches and not games that mattered. And here we've got a competition where the games matter more. I don't think we've reached it to the level where it's of a World Cup or European Championship, but they matter more. And, you know, that you're playing teams of a similar ability and that you are going to get better games therefore, you know. So, no, it's all good. And, the semi-finals particularly were really exciting.
Absolutely. Well, a positive sounding Mark Langdon, that's always good. We've got so much coming up on the show. We're going to be welcoming Dan Childs later on for his EFL best bets. We're going to be taking a whiz through the whole Premier League card for Mark's bets in each of those. And of course, at the end of the show, as always, we'll be answering all of your Twitter questions. Thanks to all of you for getting involved, as always. But first of all, we were mentioning last time on Mark Langdon's Bets Club all about the early kickoffs. And does it put you off betting on them? Well, Mark, we've got a very special guest to talk us through exactly what we should expect.
Yeah, so my colleague Kevin Pauline has joined us because he has looked into the relationship, between matches when they start and, how many goals are in games rather than necessarily than, the actual result. So, hi, Kevin, you okay?
Yes, hi, Mark, I'm fine. Thank you for inviting me on.
No worries.
If you call me special, I'll come back again.
Exactly. Well, you know, we know whenever there's a question on sort of, you know, data, if you don't have the answer, we really would be struggling because, you know, you've been through many of the cliches and myths around sort of football and football betting down the years and studied to see whether there is any truth in them. I suppose, first of all, if you can just go through what you have looked at between start times and sort of football outcomes, it'd be a good place to start.
Yes, of course, Mark. Yes. What I've looked at really is the relationship between goals and kickoff times. And I did that, first of all, because when early kickoffs first sort of came in, there was an idea that they tended to be sort of quieter games, that you had less incidents in them, in particular that you had less goals. And funnily enough, that was part of the reason part of the desire in having them at the beginning, because early kickoffs, unlike most other changes in football over the years, didn't come in, first of all, because of demands by the television companies, but because of a request by the police. The first early kickoffs tended to be games where there was a potential for disorder, and the police thought that if you kicked them off earlier than usual and fans had less time beforehand to spend in the pub, there was less chance of everything going wrong, you know. So the intention was to sort of dampen down the atmosphere. And I know that going back maybe like 15 years, say, when there weren't so many early kickoffs as there are now, there was a feeling, even amongst very knowledgeable punters, that they tended to produce fewer goals. I do know professional punters who had that idea sort of quite strongly. And I looked into it first about 15 years ago, And I looked at the Premier League in the Championship, and that did seem to be the case at that time. I don't know whether things have changed over the years or whether just at the beginning I had a small sample, but at other times when I've looked at it again more recently, for example, I looked at it about 5 years ago and I had a much bigger sample by then, and early kickoffs were much more common. And by that time, there really didn't seem to be anything in it anymore in terms of goals. This is what specifically what I'm talking about now. And most recently of all, I looked at it just in the Premier League up to the season before last, which is probably a good time to stop anyway, because last season there were no fans and everything was different. And then also there didn't seem to be any change in the number of goals you would anticipate in a game, whatever the kickoff of, whether it was early, whether it was late, or what have you. So that, you asked me for a quick answer. That's probably not quite so quick, but that's an overview of what I've done so far, you know.
And that relationship, Kevin, between goals and sort of outcomes, I mean, you've obviously looked into to that as well, haven't you, you know, many times over the years. What's your sort of... I suppose your analysis told you of that.
Yes, you're quite right, Mark. There's a relationship between goals and all the other things that happen in a match, particularly outcomes. As a general rule, if you've got a set of games and you get fewer goals, you tend to have more draws. And if you've got more draws, then obviously there are fewer wins for this team and that team. And particularly, you would get fewer wins for the favourites, who are the most likely winners. But what I haven't done is I've never looked specifically at outcomes themselves or graded teams by the odds that they are or sort of anything along those lines. That's sort of...
Yeah, but I think that, you know, obviously, you know, the goals angle is still an interesting one. EFL Betts on Twitter, he got in touch and said, "Hi, Mark, RE, your podcast about early kickoffs. Had a look in the Championship. If you backed every home team at Pinnacle closing 1.99 or less, i.e. an odds-on shot, you would have won 8 points over 5 and a bit seasons. If you did the same in kickoffs for 1:30 hours... earlier hours or earlier, then you would have lost 9 points in 70 games, suggesting there that, you know, over that sample size, that there is an issue for favorite backers. I suppose, Kevin, what would you say to that? I mean, it's just that there has to be a chance that that's just random, doesn't there?
There is a chance, but I certainly don't want to belittle the research at all. It was very good of that guy to do the research, and it's obviously quite comprehensive stuff. You know, he's looked over a reasonable period of time, and thank you to him for passing it on to you. So I've no doubt that the what he says is what was actually there at that time. But you're quite right. The questions you would have following on from that would be: would you have found the same things if you looked in other competitions, and also would you find the same things if you looked at other time spans? So it's a question of, is that going to continue? You know, is it a real phenomenon at the moment? Sorry, excuse my stuck tongue. You know, is it going to carry on? Or is it just something that sort of just happened for a reason we're not particularly sure about, you know?
No, I mean, yeah, Manchester United have struggled in the early kickoffs this season, but I'm not sure that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's tactical weaknesses are defined just by what time a match starts. We've had a poll running on Racing Post Sport on this subject, and we were asking, do you think a favourite is more vulnerable in the lunchtime starts? 56% of those that got back said that, yes, they do believe a favourite is more vulnerable. 20%, and this is the one that I voted for, was that after the international break or a European game, then I think that there is a case to be made for thinking they're more vulnerable. 24% of you that got back to us, and thank you to everybody that voted in the poll, said that no, it makes absolutely no difference whatsoever. Adam Clark, he was on Twitter to say, my guess is that it just appears to be that the favourite is more vulnerable because we look out for it and it hurts that much more when they let the acca down rather than, say, you know, a game later on. Increased arousal for that fixture causes the bias. However, Richard Faulkner said that he thinks it does play a part, and that's one of the reasons why he will be opposing Liverpool at the weekend for their game against Watford. I think it's been a fascinating subject, and Kevin, maybe it's one that you can look at some stage this season to see if it is more of sort of favourites being vulnerable in sort of, you know, more competitions. It's certainly something that's got the punters talking at the moment.
It certainly has, and I certainly will, Mark. And thanks for mentioning that other point about the other competitions, because if I could just add very briefly, I think that potentially does make a difference after international breaks and also after Champions League games. I did do something, I think it was last season, so it wasn't too long ago, on Champions League games, because one thing that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and other managers have complained about is playing in the Champions League on a Wednesday night and then having to start early on a Saturday in the Premier League. And for that particular scenario, there did seem to be something in the complaint. You know, teams who played in the Champions League on a Wednesday night did seem to win a little bit less often very early on a Saturday in the Premier League. What the reason was, again, you know, that's open to debate, but certainly the figures suggested that it had happened.
Okay, brilliant. Thanks, Kevin, and we'll be back after this.
Okay, time for the match of the day then, and we've gone for Newcastle against Spurs. I just want to say, brilliant to get Kevin Pullain on the podcast. He's always brilliant reading in the Racing Post. It's his column always kind of debunks cliches, and I think that's great because we're all guilty of falling for cliches when we're punting on football. Now, we've gone for Newcastle Spurs. It's on Sunday. We've also got a South Wales derby on Sunday, and I know we've got a lot of Swansea and Cardiff fans listening in, so sorry to anyone that Mark's offended with going with this game instead. This is a fascinating game, Mark, because not only have we got the complexity of the game itself, but of course making big headlines in the last week or so is Newcastle's takeover. Let's first of all get not necessarily thoughts on the takeover itself, but does that affect this game in isolation?
I think it does, in as much as, you know, St James's Park will be, you know, jumping for the game. I'd seen last week it was already sold out, which, you know, and Newcastle are well supported anyway. But, you know, the fact that it's sold out so far ahead of kickoff, and that was, you know, the catalyst really for those final tickets to be sold. There were a lot of people, of course, that refused to go to games while Mike Ashley was in charge. So there is a buzz around the city. Of course, it's not without its controversies, the takeover, but certainly, you know, in Newcastle at least, you know, they're only looking at the positives behind this. And I think it does make it, therefore, a slightly harder game for Tottenham, just in terms of the enthusiasm from the crowd. As we speak, Steve Bruce is still the manager. And I did see Steve Howe said that, you know, that would certainly burst a few balloons if he was still in charge for Sunday. I mean, all the reports suggest that he'll be gone by then. So, you know, the fans and the team are united. You know, there was that kind of anti-Steve Bruce feeling around the ground. Even if he is still in charge, I think the takeover will kind of just gazump that. And, you know, they know that eventually he'll be gone. So I do think it's a slightly harder game for Tottenham. It's one of those ones, though, that is quite difficult to, you know, to put into a pricing model, isn't it? You know, how much will the enthusiasm of the crowd impact the game? So what I was wondering is just whether Newcastle might just start a bit brighter You know, the crowd are going to be bang up for it right from the word go. So I'm not sure how it affects the pricing models, but I would just say, looking at it from, you know, a fan point of view, it feels like a more difficult game for Tottenham than it would have been, you know, 10 days ago.
Well, general prices for this game, Newcastle around 5-2, 21-20 if you're backing Spurs, and around 13-5 the draw. I must say, Mark, when I initially glanced at them prices, I did think Newcastle looked quite big considering what we've just mentioned. Now, of course, we need to take into consideration it hasn't been the brightest of starts for Newcastle. But with that being said, there have been parts of games, especially with the kind of St. Maximum factor, where they have looked genuinely really good. And you've obviously watched a lot of Spurs this season. Which way do you see it going?
I think it's a really interesting game. I think the best bet is over 2.5 goals, 4-5. You know, if you have a look at sort of Newcastle, we've mentioned it on the pod a few times already, but actually even under Steve Bruce, some of their attacking play was good. But I was looking at the defensive side of both teams as much as anything else. Spurs have allowed the joint most shots in the league, which is really not a great stat to be sort of top of the table for. They're both in the top four for shots on target, you know, in terms of opponents having shots on their goal. So neither team defends very well. Tottenham are missing a lot of players defensively for this game. The South Americans, Royale, the right back, Romero, the centre back, Sanchez, who would have come in for Romero, they're all missing. Lo Celso has been playing really well for Argentina. He's out. I just look at that Newcastle defence, though, and don't really see them coping particularly well against Kane, Son and Lucas Moura. So I think it's going to be a really exciting game. The buzz of the crowd's only going to help that. And yeah, that's why I went for over 2.5 goals at around about 4-5.
And just finally, a slightly longer term look at this season for the home side, Newcastle here. There's been money coming for sort of top half Premier League finishes to win the FA Cup. Now, as we mentioned, there's a lot of, you know, elements that we need to take into consideration here. Obviously, Newcastle can't really make any changes to their squad until January, until the next transfer window. So with that being said, I mean, is there still a chance of relegation here for Newcastle? Because that was the thought at the start of the season, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, before they can finish in the top half, we've got to just make sure they finish 17th. You know, they don't want to be in the Championship rather than, you know, fighting for Champions League next season, which is what their fans will be hoping for. I don't think they'll be relegated. I have to say, the money that they can spend in January, even if they don't get the caliber of player that has, you know, been linked in sort of when you see all these probable teams for next season, I think some of them are pretty fanciful for now. But even if they just sign a lot of kind of good Premier League players from outside of the top seven, you know, they'll, for instance, they've been linked with Tarkowski, that would immediately weaken one of their kind of relegation rivals, wouldn't it? You know, for now, I think that once they sort out the manager situation, I can see them staying. I can see them staying up pretty comfortably. You know, not without troubling necessarily the top half, would be my best guess. I know there's been money for them to win the FA Cup. If you're on at 66s, you might have a decent bet. But I still think the pressure, whoever comes in as manager, will be to make sure that the team is well away from relegation trouble. And so, you know, the FA Cup doesn't become a priority on third round day, maybe come sort of fifth round, sixth round, if they're still in it, you know, it becomes a different story. But I wouldn't be getting that excited about sort of long-term Newcastle bets for this season, though.
There we go. Over 2.5 goals. The best bet for Mark Langdon. Let's take a look at the rest of the Premier League card then. A really exciting weekend in store. We start with the early kickoff, 12:30, Watford against Liverpool. Now, of course, Mark, there's been a Watford sacking since we last spoke. I mean, we could have probably expected that. Their start to the season, though, has actually been relatively decent. I think it's 7 points from 7 games, isn't it? They go up against the Liverpool side here. How do you see this one going?
I mean, first of all, I think, you know, kind of Ranieri, I mean, he's not, I don't think he's an amazing appointment as manager. even though he has won the Premier League, but he's somebody that concentrates on defence first. He did that when he went to Sampdoria. I think he'll try to organise Watford, which is not that dissimilar really to what Isco was attempting. I think that he'll get a reaction in terms of they'll be competitive, but I was looking at Liverpool to win an under 3.5 goals. It's a quick turnaround for Liverpool from the internationals. They've got the Champions League in midweek. So Jurgen Klopp might have to think about his team selection at Vicarage Road in terms of, you know, maybe not playing all of the big hitters, and some of them won't be able to play the South Americans particularly. All four Watford defeats have been to nil, so it wouldn't surprise me if this was something like a routine 2-0 Liverpool win.
Yeah, I feel like I've been, for some reason, defending Watford's approach to managerial appointments and sackings over the last 2 weeks. I just find, Mark, and I don't know if you agree, from neutrals, there's almost this snobbery around, well, you have to keep a manager for a certain amount of time, otherwise you're not doing it the right way. Watford's approach, certainly over the last decade, on the whole, has worked. FA Cup final, lengthy Premier League stays, promotions from the Championship. Like, they've done well. And they appointed Sisko to do a job. He did the job. They felt he was out of depth in the Premier League. They've hired Ranieri, and I wouldn't put it past them to stay in the Premier League. I'd love to hear the thoughts of our listeners on this one. Do you think Watford are going about things the right way? It seems to be right for them. Villa Wolves up next. 3 o'clock, Villa at home. How's this one going?
I was looking at Wolves or draw double chance for this game. I mean, regular listeners will know that I've been pretty keen on Wolves for most of the season, really. I feel like they've been a little bit unlucky with their points tally. They've been competitive in most of the games. The Brentford one was a disappointment, of course. But other than that, I think they've actually played quite well. I was really disappointed with Aston Villa before the international break. I was at the game when they lost 2-1 at Spurs, and they didn't do much at all. I mean, they spent most of their time just doing the long throws, and Matty Cash would jog over from the right back to the left sort of wing position and launch one in. It was all a bit sort of one-dimensional and predictable, and it took quite a lot of time off the clock. Maybe they were doing that because they were away from home and wanted to turn the crowd. But I just looked at Villa, and yeah, they disappointed me in sort of around about the 11 to 10 mark to beat a sort of solid Wolves team. Didn't do it for me. So yeah, and obviously it might be a case of Emi Martinez, you know, he's away with Argentina at the moment, so going to be difficult for him to get back and play. So I thought that Wolves will draw a double chance.
Yeah, I don't think their big signing Emi Buendia has quite hit the ground running either. It's Leicester against Manchester United up next. Now, Mark spoke there of Aston Villa disappointing him throughout this season so far. For me, my biggest disappointments have been Leicester. Can they bounce back here against the United side, Mark?
Well, I was struggling to make a case for backing United around about evens to win the game, but I totally agree that Leicester have been a disappointment, which is why I was heading towards the draw in this game. Leicester have still drawn 3 of their last 6 matches in all competitions, so it's still going to be a difficult game for United. And United, you know, 2 wins in 6, they were both in the last minute, or that one at West Ham and then the one against Villarreal. I joked earlier on about sort of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, you know, being tactically inept at lunchtime and at sort of, you know, evening games. He's not the only problem at Manchester United, but certainly not helping the situation. Varane picked up an injury playing for France, so I was reading it could be Bailly and Lindelof at the back, which I don't think is, again, the centre-back pairing you'd be dreaming of if you're backing Man United at evens to win this game. So a tricky one. Obviously very surprised it's not on TV. When I go for the draw, it's almost a cry for help. And if you want to leave this game alone, then I certainly couldn't put you off doing that either.
Yeah, Manchester City Burnley, the next fixture we'll be previewing. City 9's on for this one. So where are you finding value here?
Well, I was looking at 4-0 and 5-0, just sort of small split stakes on those two correct scores. I mean, 5-0, I mean, probably just a coincidence, but Burnley have lost 5-0 on each of their last 4 visits to the Etihad.
Wow.
Man City have already won 2 home games by that score already this season. You'll know one of those.
Yeah, we won't talk about that, Mark. Yeah, thank you.
And they beat Arsenal again by the same one. Look, I think that Burnley are a little bit unlucky themselves to have so few points on the board. Been very competitive so far. The problem is that if City get ahead early in this type of game, then it just becomes, you know, a horrendous afternoon in store for the team. So, you know, I don't want to be backing City at nines on. You don't want to be putting them in the Akers that short either. You know, why not have a, you know, a bit of a go at the sort of higher correct scores? And it 14 to 1 for 5-0. So if you do sort of believe in the head-to-heads, then that will certainly be one for you.
Let's take a trip to Carrow Road. Norwich Brighton up next, Mark.
Not a great game, I don't think, this one in store. I was going to go for under 2.5 goals. If you have a look at the expected goals, sort of attacking output for both teams, it's only 13.2 sort of on the expected goals for, and that's in 14 combined matches. Now, yeah, Norwich, and you'll know this, that you've been struggling to create loads of chances, Jack, but Brighton actually haven't created as much as what they did last season when they kept missing the chances. This time they've been more prolific in front of goal, but I don't actually think that they're playing, certainly not playing any better than they did last season, but they are top six for defence on expected goals. So yeah, if they are to win, it might be one where they grind it out. Your thoughts on Norwich here? Is Daniel Farker under big pressure? Doesn't feel like that sort of internally, if not, you know, even if the fans are getting annoyed.
I don't think Farke's under too much pressure internally. And I think the point that Norwich picked up against Burnley before the international break was a really important one. We're still miles adrift in the Premier League, but in terms of a mental standpoint, it feels as if Norwich have a foundation to build on now and a clean sheet. I think Farke maybe has the ability to turn things around, and Brighton at home presents somewhat of an opportunity. But I agree with you in terms of chances created, Norwich have been poor this season. So that bet stands out to me. Southampton Leeds up next, Mark.
Oh, another draw. It's one of them coupons, really, where I'm looking at it thinking, yeah, don't fancy that one, don't fancy that one. But Southampton have had 4 draws in 7 Premier League games. There's no Ward-Prowse, which takes away, you know, a lot of their creativity, both in terms of, you know, from open play, but also, of course, his dead ball ability. And Leeds have had 3 draws in that time as well. And if you think about those 3 draws for Leeds, it could have been 5. You know, there's that disallowed goal v Watford that was very controversial. You know, I think that some people certainly felt that Watford should have had that equaliser, even if their play didn't deserve it. And then you had that last gasp Antonio goal that sort of stopped it being a draw against West Ham. I just don't think Leeds are firing on all cylinders. If they were, then I'd probably go for them. But that's why I sort of sat on the fence a little bit with the draw. And yeah, I do think it's a really difficult Premier League coupon, getting the excuses in early.
It certainly does look a difficult coupon, this, Mark. For me, the highlight looks to be the evening game on Saturday, 5:30 kickoff, Brentford-Chelsea. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, I mean, Brentford have been fantastic, really attacked the Premier League, but, you know, clever manager as well. They've kind of, you know, shut up shop when they've needed to. You know, really impressive the way that they've gone about it. I was looking here at draw half-time, Chelsea full-time. Chelsea have been level at the break in 6 of their last 8 matches. I don't think that's a big surprise with the way they look to grind teams down. And I just wonder if the bench will be key for Chelsea in this game, because they are capable, you know, of chucking on any number of game changers if they need to in that last half an hour. So I think Brentford will be competitive, as they have been all season, but maybe the bench to win it for Chelsea as the match wears on.
2 games on the Sunday. We've, of course, already discussed Newcastle Spurs. So the other is Everton West Ham.
Yeah, one where I do feel a little bit more confident here. Everton draw, no bet, 8-11. I think Everton's good start's been going under the radar somewhat, and certainly you know, not getting the full respect of bookmakers. Now, they've had quite an easy start. They've played 4 of the current bottom 5, and 3 of those were at home. But I thought they deserved to win at Brighton. The point at Old Trafford was a good one. Again, they might even have nicked all 3 in that game. We don't know yet whether Calvert-Lewin or Richarlison will be back. And you would want at least one of those back, I suppose, if you were to be more confident of the bet on Everton. But, you know, in terms of West Ham, I look at them and they've also had quite an easy start. You know, they played 5 of the 7 matches have been against teams currently below them. The two that they played above them that were the ones that they lost. So I think both teams have, like I say, made the most of the sort of good fixtures that they've had. And I'm not sure that Everton's sort of home advantage is being truly weighed in here. So I felt 8-11 draw no bet was pretty fair on the Merseysiders.
And Monday night football returns with Arsenal Crystal Palace.
I've surprised myself here with this one because I assumed actually that sort of Arsenal were going to be too short and I'd be sort of getting with Crystal Palace maybe on the Asian handicap or something like that. I'm quite a big fan of what Patrick Vieira is trying to do at Palace and I think they've made good signings. But I thought 4-6 Arsenal to win this game at the Emirates was more than fair, really. Yeah, they definitely deserve to beat Norwich and Tottenham in those home games that they won. 10 points from the last four, you know, maybe slightly flattering because, you know, Brighton, I think, deserve to win that game that they, you know, before the international break. But 4-6 Arsenal at home to a Palace team that is picking up more plaudits than points, I think it's fair to say, this season. Like I say, I had this one down. I had Arsenal down shorter on my book. So I'll go for the Gunners here.
Time for the EFL Best Bets with Dan Childs. As always, delighted to welcome Dan Childs to the show. Mark's been giving his Premier League thoughts. Let's get the EFL guru himself to run through the EFL card. Dan, great to have you on the show. You've got 3 bets for us this week.
Yeah, I've got 3 sort of decent value ones. At the moment, you know, they should all be odds against, you know, so good prices. So I'm going to start off with Ipswich in League One. I just think they're a team that's playing away to Cambridge this weekend. I think they're a team that's going to improve as the season goes on. Recruited 20 new players since the end of last season, so it's understandable they had a slow start. Had 3 points from the first 6 games. They've got 10 points from the next 5 after that, and they're going into the game with you know, a lot of confidence. Got the joint best attack in the league with 21 goals. 9 of them from Macaulay Bon, who they've got on loan from Queen's Park Rangers. The worry is defensively, they have conceded 19, but only 4 of those have been in the last 5 games. So they're tightening up at the back. And I think that ongoing defensive improvement should see them continue shooting up the table.
Just quickly on Macaulay Bon, Dan, because Mark put him up as his bet for top scorer earlier on in Mark Langdon's Bets Club earlier on in the season. Is there a chance that he can get recalled or is that off the cards?
There is a chance. I mean, these season-long loans, there's always generally a break clause halfway through the season. So, I mean, it depends on, you know, I suppose how well he's doing. If he does, if it's almost a situation where if he does too well, it could be, you know, encourage QPR to take him back. I mean, QPR have got quite a battery of strikers there, haven't they? They signed Andre Gray on loan from Watford, you know, just before the window shut. They've got Lyndon Dykes there as well, Charlie Austin. They've got quite a few decent striking options, QPR. So, I mean, maybe if you know, they don't get too many injuries at QPR, they might let him stay there for the whole season.
Yeah, no, I've just wondered because he's, as you say, he's been excellent. And Ipswich starting to put their sort of good early signs together. What's up next?
Well, for, I mean, first of all, just on the Ipswich one, I mean, obviously a lot of positives about Ipswich. I mean, the Cambridge, who they're facing, I mean, they have done well as a newly promoted club, 13 points from their first 10 games. I just think they're facing Ipswich at the wrong time. So it's a real pro Ipswich bet. I mean, following on from that, I've got two bets that I like in League Two. First of them is Northampton at home to Mansfield. I mean, Northampton, they're 2 points outside the playoffs in League Two, but they do need a response. They've had 2 losses in a row, 2-0 at home to Sutton, who have had 5 wins in 6. They're in great form, so there's no disgrace there. And they've also lost 2-1 at Hartlepool, who have got the best home record in the division. I'm backing them to get back on track at home to Mansfield, who are 21st in the division, and they're having a terrible time. I mean, they were well fancied at the start of the season, but they got no win in 9. No win in 11 in all competitions, and the injuries are absolutely piling up. They've got virtually like a whole team out injured. I mean, George Maris was the latest. He had quite a bad, what looked like a head injury in a 0-0 draw at home to Oldham last weekend. So they're in a tough situation at the moment, Mansfield, and I think they'll struggle to get anything.
It feels like this happens every season, well-fancied, and then just get off to a horror start, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think last season it was less to do with the injuries and more to do with the fact they were just playing poorly. To be fair, this season, any squad, if you've got, you know, 10, 11 players out, it's going to be tough. And yeah, you look through at the moment, especially at centre-back, they put Hawkins, who's a striker, back there in the last couple of games to play there. And he was doing quite well as an auxiliary centre-back. And then he's got injured as well. So, it's, you know, they've really had a, you know, a terrible time with injuries. So I think, to be fair, if that does clear up, they are good enough, you know, to rise up the table. But at the moment, it's a good time to play them.
OK, and your final bet for this week, Dan?
Final one is sticking in the same division, League Two. Swindon, who are third at home to Rochdale, who are down in 18th. I mean, just looking at that with the league positions, it looks a good bet, doesn't it? At odds against, but there's other reasons than that as well. The recent form of Swindon has been superb. I mean, they've won the last two games. The last of them was a 2-0 win, you know, in front of the television cameras away to Forest Green, who were top of the division. Now they won that game without five players who were on international duty. So it's an incredible victory away to the top of the table team. Ben Garner's doing a fantastic job there with very much a new look squad, but they've also got new owners that the fans are very happy with down there at Swindon. They just seem a club that are on the up at the moment. As opposed to that, Rochdale, who got relegated with Swindon last season, they've had an up and down start to the season, but they've been struggling a bit more recently. Won just three of their last 11 games in total, and I just think to be heading to Swindon the way Swindon are playing at the moment, it's a really tough match for them this weekend.
Okay, let's get the best bets for this week then from Mark Landon. Now, we had a lovely treble land on the last show. That was around about 4-1, 7-2. So well done to anyone that followed Mark in. And let's try and land another one this week alongside some others. Mark, good to get that one up. And you've got four more bets this week. Let's start with the prop shop.
Yeah, so obviously we're recording this on the Tuesday, so there's no sort of, the player markets are not up yet in terms of sort of cards and stuff like that. So I was going for a first goal scorer, and I just thought Harry Kane, 7-2. I've gone for goals in that game, haven't I, against, you know, Newcastle and Spurs. Kane has had a really slow start, obviously not scored in the Premier League, Jack. But only five players have had more shots on target than he's eight already. So he's on the same as Sadio Mane. So he's getting the ratio up. And let's not forget, he missed the first game. He was subbing the second. And, you know, he was played out of position against Chelsea. Against Aston Villa, Tottenham had eight shots on target. He had four. I feel like he's just warming to the task. And there is a little bit of a due one in there as well, because we know that, you know, it's not going to go on for too much longer. Newcastle were not very good defensively. They might actually be a little bit overexcited by the takeover, overcommit early on and then get done. And, you know, Harry Kane remains, I think, as good as ever. And it won't be long before he's scoring goals again.
It would be very unwise to write a certain Harry Kane off, wouldn't it? Let's get your long shot for this week.
Yeah, so it's Freiburg, 100-30 in the Bundesliga against Leipzig. You know, I've taken on Leipzig a few times already this season. Not going to stop. They've lost to Mainz. They've lost to Wolfsburg. They lost in the Champions League as well to Bruges. And, you know, Freiburg have been decent. You know, they're up to fourth in the Bundesliga. They deserve to beat Borussia Dortmund when they did earlier on this season. This is their first game in their new stadium. So what is home advantage? Will it be, you know, are the fans going to be up for it? Do they need time to adjust? I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that 100-30, I'll be backing them to shock the Red Bull side.
Now, no pressure, but we got the treble up last week. Is that the second treble win, Mark?
It was the first treble that I'd selected, but then we did one on the
Twitter social
poll.
One,
we did the social poll and I said that one would win, and it did. So can I claim it? I'll claim an assist. I'll claim one goal and an assist.
Okay. We need you to be the out-and-out goal scorer here. So take one from the halfway line, run it through and put one top corner here.
Okay. Well, it's around about the same price as the one we did before the international break. And again, it is just European team. So it's Milan to beat Verona, 7:45 on Saturday night. Milan have started the season excellently, six wins and a draw domestically, scoring a lot of goals. So hopefully they can get it off and running before Bayern Munich to beat Bayer Leverkusen 2:30 on Sunday. Leverkusen are a good side this season, but I just think that they become Neverkusen when they take on Bayern Munich. And they're not the only team that crumbles when they take on Bayern. Bayern have won 9 of the last 12 meetings against Leverkusen. They've scored 10 goals the last 3 times they've been to the Bay Arena to take on Leverkusen as well. It just becomes, they're just all conquering and some teams can't handle it. And hopefully the bet's still running. 5:30 on Sunday, Villarreal to beat Osasuna. Looking at Villarreal, they've had 2 wins and 5 draws in La Liga so far. They've been the better side in most of their matches. So that could quite easily be something like, 4 wins rather than just 2. If you remember, they played so well at Old Trafford and managed to lose that game as well. So I'm more interested in the fact that they're playing well. If they keep playing well, eventually the results will come. And they're playing a pretty average Osasuna side. So hopefully they can get the job done.
And if you were to have just one bet this week, which would it be? What's your nap?
Yeah, so it's Milan -1 on the Asian handicap against Verona. So if they win by 1 goal, you get your money back. If they win by 2 or more, the bet's a winner. If they don't win, then, you lose your money. It's around about 4-5. I've sort of spoken about, Milan and what they've been doing this season already in the top treble. For Verona's point of view, they've already been through one manager. Di Francesco was sacked. Tudor came in, Igor Tudor, and the results look better. And that they beat Spezia 4-0 last time out. The XG on that game was 0.4 for their chances created, and they've managed to score 4 goals. Their defending overall this season has been an absolute shambles. They've conceded 14 goals, and I'm not sure that Tudor's had a couple of goes at Udinese, not really done that well. He was part of the coaching setup with Pirlo at Juventus when that didn't go so well. So I don't think he's some kind of miracle worker. It just maybe had the rub of the green in recent matches. And this is a really difficult game at San Siro. So I'm hoping Milan can win and win pretty well.
Excellent. There we go. Time for some questions off Twitter. As always, a big thank you to everyone that got their questions in. It's worth noting you can follow either Mark Langdon on Twitter or at Racing Post Sport to be involved with the show. Let's start with Matt Sanders then. And he says, how important are possession stats in making betting decisions? Throughout football betting down the years, teams who keep the ball tend to be shorter prices. Looks to be a trend to giving up the ball and countering. If so, has this changed your betting strategy? What's your take on this, Mark?
Well, I think that possession is just one aspect that I would look at. I don't like teams that have good possession numbers, but sort of bad shot ones. And so, I think they're the type of teams that, can occasionally be overrated. You do see that, don't you? Teams that, keep the ball for keepsake and don't really do anything with it. And I tend to think that they're sort of badly coached sides, rather than well-coached ones. But generally speaking, I like teams that have got possession. I mean, if you have a look at sort of last season, the teams that were top of the possession table in Europe, Barcelona, Man City, Paris Saint-Germain, Liverpool, Chelsea, Sevilla, Bayern Munich. They were the top 7. All of them, I think, would say that they achieved their goals in some ways. I know that Barcelona didn't win the Liga. They did win Copa del Rey. Man City won the Premier League. Paris Saint-Germain didn't win the league, but went far in the Champions League, weren't they? Semi-finalists. Liverpool had a lot of injuries. Chelsea ended up winning the Champions League. Sevilla qualified for the Champions League. Bayern Munich were dominant in the Bundesliga. And then you've got somebody who in 8th was Sassuolo. And Jack, many times I was on the Football Podcast last season.
You liked them, didn't you?
I would give Sassuolo a little shout out. They were punching well above their weight, eventually didn't qualify for Europe. But I still think that, they were a really good side. And like I say, I would be looking to keep the teams that have more of the ball on side. I do appreciate that they tend to be well-liked by the market, but I think there's a reason, generally speaking, particularly when it's backed up with, decent shot stats. So in isolation, it doesn't mean very much, but you know, with good XG, shots on target, shots overall, touches in the box, that type of thing. I mean, that generally means you're a good side.
Yeah, worth keeping an eye on then, Matt. Let's get a question from Kevin Dean. And Kevin asks, what price will Newcastle go off for next season's title? Kevin, looking ahead here, Mark.
Yeah, well, he was a bowler for Derbyshire back in the day. Kevin likes a bet. So, I mean, I was sort of discussing this with him and I went for around about 50 to 1. And Kevin was saying he thought it would be shorter than that. And I mean, maybe I'm being a little bit pessimistic, I suppose, about Newcastle's chances. But I had a look at sort of the outright odds for the start of this season. Leicester, Spurs and Arsenal were around about 50 to 1. Mm. Now, I think Newcastle, even with their newfound wealth, are going to do really well to be better than Tottenham, you know, Arsenal, Leicester come the start of next season. You know, it usually takes a while for this money to really make an impact. You know, which type of player will arrive sort of now or in the summer when they're not in Europe, and, you know, probably mercenaries and, you know, or those that are kind of at big six clubs but can't get in at the big six teams. You know, if Antonio Conte comes in, maybe you've got a different story. But I tend to think as well with the managers, it's probably not going to, and I'm only guessing, but my guess is that it's not going to be that caliber of manager just yet. It's going to need somebody to do the hard yards, taking them from, you know, a team that could be fighting relegation to up past Europa League. I think that, you know, that will take a couple of years and, you know, a consistent investment and also making the right decision. So that's why I went for around about 50 to 1. But
yeah, I mean,
a fascinating question.
Yeah, it's a huge step up, isn't it? I mean, you can throw as much money as you like at it, but essentially you're taking a team, as you say, battling relegation to trying to beat the best teams in the world in Manchester City and Liverpool. So huge ground to make up, but I'm sure give it time and it will happen. Lucas asks, I like this question from Lucas. Mark, anti-post markets have become stale over the years, whereas match day markets are innovative and endless. Where do you see the next area for football punters? And Lucas gave the example of when Betfred introduced the both teams to score coupon.
Yeah, well, I mean, the interesting thing about the Betfred both teams to score coupon was that they weren't the first to do it. They were just the first to stick out a coupon that had no real sort of price. I suppose, you know, in terms of the prices, they just went the same price for every team. And that's why it became so popular, because you were getting, I think it was 4 to 5, wasn't it? About, you know, ones that are now going off 1 to 2. You get like teams like Crewe that were, you know, Peterborough, you know. So I think that certainly helped the both teams to score boom. The fact that you were really doubling, tripling, quadrupling value every week. It is a really good question. It's one that I have to ask myself on a daily basis, really, in terms of my new role, really, with the company. A really difficult one. I think that there's more to come from bet builders. I think that we haven't reached the sort of top of the mountain as far as they're concerned. I think that they'll become easier to place. I think you'll be able to put more markets on there.
Are you a fan of the bet builders, Mark?
I'm a fan as much as the personalization part of it. I think that the value could be better, you know, if we're talking about it professionally. But I understand that if you're just looking, you know, let's say, you know, Liverpool against Watford, you know, not many people are going to want to back Liverpool to win that game at short odds on Saturday lunchtime. But if you chuck in some corners and some cards and some, you know, a player to score, all of a sudden you've got a market where if you're playing your fiver or tenner, you know what I mean? You can really juice up the price rather than, you know, somebody that's putting a fiver on a, you know, 2 to 5 shot or whatever, and you get getting, you know, £2 win. Not many people want to do that. So I am a fan in as much as I think that they help on, you know, just somebody that's looking to play for smaller stakes. Building on from that, I think the player props, I don't think we've, again, reached as far as we can with them. When I sort of see some of the pricing on it from some of the bookmakers, it's pretty disappointing, you know, how short and one-sided the markets are. And, you know, I feel like they could be fairer. And if they were, then, you know, that there'd be I think, plenty of opportunities. And also, you know, there can be more stuff done on that kind of fantasy football aspect of passes and tackles and assists. And so I don't think we've reached, again, the top of those. I think free-to-play games, again, super sort of Sky Super 6 seems to have dominated the market. But again, I feel like if somebody marketed sort of the bet builder or the player prop stuff a bit better and focused more on that, you know, you could have a rival to that. And then you kind of get people involved that way. Esports, whenever you go to these conferences, people tell you esports is massive, hasn't made that jump in the UK, but it has elsewhere. And I think that young people do like watching other people play FIFA and stuff like that. So probably will be a boom in the UK at some stage. What I would like to see is in America, like Last Man Standing, probably not a great name given that, you know, maybe we'll go for Last Person Standing now. But, you know, that idea where you pick one team, it's like a Survivor, you pick one team to win, you're not allowed to pick them again. And you can get these like massive pools of people betting them, and also sort of giant handicapper games where in the US, like, you know, you get a season long competition where you put in, you know, sometimes a hefty stake, but if you're splitting it, you know, between 17 weeks, it doesn't have to be. And you get these sort of massive pools, and then whoever is sort of top tipster at the end of it scoops the lot, or, you know, you can pay down to 6, 7, 8 places. I'm not quite sure how that would be sort of worked from a sort of a compliance point of view, but I certainly feel like, you know, there's sort of potential there for some massive pool, you know, and sort of, you know, to get like a top tipster come out at the end of it. So, I mean, there's some things to look at, but I've probably not mentioned what's coming next. If I knew the answer to that, probably wouldn't tell you anyway. I'd just go and create it.
I must admit, I looked at that question and didn't know where you were going. I thought, well, we've got so many options already, but that was a comprehensive look. Mark, I know you're short on time. We're coming to the end of the show, but I do just want to sneak one of my own questions in. I always like to pick your brain. Give me one midweek fancy for the Champions League, please.
Oh, yeah. So I'm going to go for Juve to win, shade of odds against, to win at Zenit on Wednesday. I think this is a decent margin, the best bet on the Champions League coupon. If you look at Zenit, I mean, they've lost 7 of their last 9 in the Champions League, 12 of their last 17 in the competition. They've been bottom the last 2 attempts at it. They've only won 4 of their last 19 matches in European competition in sort of all of the competitions. Juve have won their last 6 away in the Champions League. And I was looking at the Russian sort of club coefficient, because I was under the impression that Russian football was on a downward spiral, and it is, but it was probably even more than I imagined. So just going back over the last few years, so they were at 12.6, and then it went down to 7.58, then 4.66, then 4.33, then 2.5. Now, I don't know how they come to these numbers, and I don't know exactly what they mean, but I think we can see that we can see that the trend is going one way. And, you know, what it basically means is Russian football teams have not been doing very well in Europe. And I expect that to continue when Juve goes to St. Petersburg.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Mark. Pleasure, as always. Thank you so much for joining me once again. And as I said earlier on in the show, if you would like to get involved in future episodes, simply follow at Racing Post Sport and at Mark Langdon to get your questions in, to vote our polls. And also you can request future guests. It was brilliant to have Kevin Pullane on earlier today. Thanks to Mark, and thanks to all of you for listening. We've put up plenty of selections here. Please do remember that you don't have to back them all, and only ever gamble with money you can afford to lose. See you later, everyone. Bye-bye.